We talking rom-com, we talking action, we talking drama and movie classics. Whatever you want, yo, we have it, cause we talking movies on a podcast. So I married a film critic. So I married a film critic. So I married a film critic.
Hey honey, I just wanna talk about the movie like casually. You don't have to bring up the cinematography. Honestly, let's just talk about like how the characters were fun.
Married a film critic. So I married a film critic. So I married.
Welcome to So I Married a Film Critic. I'm your co-host Julia.
And I'm Barry the Film Critic. Hello everyone.
And we decided last minute, very random, to watch Don't Breathe 2 as kind of a follow-up to Don't Breathe.
So for those of you listening to the prior episode going, I wonder what they thought of the sequel, now you will know. You will have all the answers.
I actually really liked the first movie, and we had a really, I thought, good conversation about that. But mostly because I had no idea what the movie was going to be about. And I was just shocked at every surprise, every turn. And so this time, you know, we knew kind of what was going to go down. Well, we knew there was going to be a blind man. And that he was a really badass fighter. And so that kind of, knowing that, kind of changed our expectations for the film, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I love the first film a lot, and that was a fun experience watching it with you, because I don't think we plan on speaking about it for the podcast, but you responded to it so strongly, and I thought, oh, wait, let's just record this right now. We just watched it. And then with the sequel, it was fun because neither of us had seen it, and I hadn't even seen a trailer for it. I avoided it. I didn't want to know anything about it. It came and went in theaters really quickly. It didn't do well at all. The critics really weren't on fire for it. I didn't read any reviews. I didn't watch any trailers. I just knew I really wanted to see it. So you and I are like the last two people on planet Earth who actually saw this film, finally.
And oh, everyone's already seen it but us?
I think it's safe to say.
Oh, okay.
Anybody who wanted to see it, when it was briefly in theaters last fall. But yeah, I mean, you said it. I mean, it's more shenanigans with the blind man. And it's a lot, you know, it falls under the problem with a lot of sequels. I mean, this movie is plagued heavily with sequelitis. It's the whole idea of take what worked the first time, make it bigger. That's what so many sequels do. And I don't think it's a good thing in this case.
You guys, his biggest problem, one of his biggest problems, was that now we know the name of the blind man. And I said, oh, the name of the blind man is Norman Nordstrom.
No, it's not.
Norman Nordstrom.
No. Norman Nordstrom. Is he brothers with Sherman Merman? What? No. No. That's awful. No, he's the blind man. We don't know his name. That's fine. We'll never know. His name is not Norman Nordstrom. No. No.
I think if I had known that before it started, I would have had way less respect for him. Just finding out about it later, I was like, okay.
I don't even know why they would do that. I mean, this character is cloaked in mystery. That's one of the things I like about him so much. We know very little bit about him. We know that, you know, he served his country. We know that he has this horrible secret, that he's done horrible things. As I said on the prior podcast, and I'll say in this one, I find myself very sympathetic to this character. And for those of you going, how could you? He's a fictional character. Relax. Who cares? But
yeah, it's okay to like bad guys in movies.
It's always okay to like bad guys in movies. Who cares? If Stephen Lang was some terrible, awful person, that's another conversation. But he's a cool cat. He's a actor who's been around for decades and decades. And apparently he's one of the good guys. But yeah, the character, I mean, there's something really obviously despicable about the character. But at the same time, even in the original film, I found there to be real pathos with him. But you know what? Finding out that his name is Norman Nordstrom, were they just like throwing darts at a wall? Like,
yeah,
like,
I don't know. We don't need to get too further into it. It just really bothers Barry. Okay. My other thing was, you know, the first movie left with kind of a cliffhanger, right? And the gal who's escaping Detroit with her sister.
Yeah, the Jane Levy character. Yeah.
Yeah. She sees that he survives. And so I think part of me thought, is this guy gonna go after them?
Yeah.
So I don't know why, how he could, being blind. I don't know how he would be able to find them, but I was a little surprised that they weren't in this movie.
And before we go on, listeners, let me be very, very clear about it. The blind community and men and women all over the country who read in Braille and, you know, have succeeded in life and have overcome so many amazing obstacles, that has nothing to do with this movie. This film exists in a total
Norman Nordstrom knows how to read Braille, by the way.
I mean, I'm sure he can read it backwards. The dude is a rock star. Stephen Lang is by far one of the best things about the movie. I mean, he is completely invested in the reality or unreality of this character. The character is basically Rambo crossed with Jigsaw. They have a lot in common. Mm. The character is sort of an amalgam of those two. So, I mean, he's brilliant. There isn't a fight that he can't win. There isn't something lying around that he could use to murder you with. He is a carpenter. He is an inventor. He's able to fake identities. I mean, this guy, there's no limits to what he can do. And on the one hand, you go, oh, that actually sounds like a role model. Well, he's a serial killer. He's awful. But at the same time, what he's capable of doing versus what someone in real life would be able to do. I mean, you're right. I mean, even beginning with, how could this guy, I mean, we'll get to it. There's so many things that he's able to do in this movie that blind, not blind, that no human being would be able to accomplish.
All right. We know you love Norman. Okay.
Blind man. He's identified in the end credits as the blind man. He shall stay that way.
I'm going to call him Norman just to bug you.
If it was Norman Bates, like be on the nose about it.
All right. Nordstrom. Okay, so 8 years after the events of the
first. Bob Bloomingdale's.
Oh my gosh. Okay, 8 years after the events of the first film, the blind man lives with 11-year-old Phoenix. And it shows that, I'm thinking, oh, he has a daughter now? Did his weird artificial insemination like thing actually happen? There's all these questions.
Again,
right?
To be clear, we know nothing.
We had no idea.
No trailer, nothing. I had no idea what this movie was going to be, just that it was Don't Breathe 2. We managed to avoid spoilers of any kind, even knowing what the concept of the movie was. So
yeah. Okay, so they kind of show that Phoenix is a young girl and he finds her like face down on the street and there's like a house fire. And then he takes her home, apparently. And so anyways, the movie kind of opens with her running. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is like the first movie. So she's running and then his Rottweiler Shadow is running after her. She gets to a car where her bag is and then there he is. He has her. And then he's like, well, you failed, you know? And she's like, oh, but I made it to my bag. And he's like, but I got the gun, you know? So you're like, wait, what? Okay. So it turns out Phoenix is, in quotes, his daughter. And he's training her for survival skills, among other things, I'm sure. And using the dog. And it's just a very strange reality. And so they walk back home. And then we meet Hernandez, which is, she's also former army. And I don't know, she does weekly deliveries to his house. And I don't know, plants, groceries, maybe? Not sure. But she takes Phoenix out to town sometimes, but he doesn't want to let her go because she failed survival class today. Oh my gosh. And so she's like, you know, you gotta let her go or she's gonna like try to escape, basically. So he lets her go with Hernandez, and this is where it gets even more interesting.
Go with Hernandez. Back by sunset.
I will.
Across the mighty sea, sing, girl, sing.
for me. It's beautiful. You made that up?
I think my mom sang it to me when I was little. And that first part's all I remember.
You want to pay her a visit?
But my father doesn't want me.
I won't tell if you don't.
So they're doing their, she's doing their errands, and they're going to head home, and Phoenix is like, I have to go to the bathroom. So she's in this like dank public restroom, and then this like creepy guy shows up, and you're like, what's happening? So he's weird. And then Shadow shows up, and she's like, he will like rip your balls off if you do anything. And he's like, well, you don't have to be scared of me. And she's like, who says I'm scared? So that's weird. And she gets in the van and Hernandez takes her home. But what we, do we know about this gang of people yet?
Yes, there okay. was a, there's a news report that there have been a series of individuals driving around stealing body parts.
No, kidnapping people, killing them, and trafficking their organs.
That's another way of putting it, yes.
Organ harvesting.
Organ harvesting, yes, there we go.
There we go.
Which always sounds like something different to me, but okay.
Okay.
And then imagine like a farm, you know, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it sounds nice, but it's not.
All right, so now, long story short, Hernandez gets, you know, these guys are after Phoenix, and so they kill Hernandez to get the address of where this girl lives.
And it's vicious and cruel. And yeah. It's the first indication, like, okay, this is definitely going in this in the sequel thing, because Don't Breathe, the original film, it's shocking, but it's not particularly gory. The sequel is gory.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they bash her head in with a hammer.
It's awful. And we like this character, and she's the first one to go. So yeah. The film is clearly, you know, I mean, you could say, like, well, it admirably is shaking up expectations. It's not playing by the rules. But yeah, if anything, the movie just lost one of its most engaging characters, which I don't think that's very wise.
Yeah, that's dumb.
To do this, I was really... especially this early on.
Yeah. So they get the address, which we're not really sure what's going on, but you and I were kind of like, oh, are they the organ harvesters? I mean, why are they going after Phoenix? Like, there's, you know, we noticed there was like a shelter for like kids who don't have parents right there next to this bathroom. And I mean, there's all sorts of people they could try and kidnap. Why this girl?
I love that you're like, you know, they're not doing this very well, these organ harvesters. And we find out why.
We find out why. But it's weird because you're like, well, there's like tons of people they could kidnap if they really like wanted to. You know what I mean? But why is Phoenix special? Okay, well, we find out. So these terrible people lure Shadow away from the house. And
they murder the dog.
They murder the dog.
Which is off camera. Yeah,
off camera. But then...
the only moment of restraint in the entire film, by the way.
Yeah. So, well, you know, you can't show animal cruelty. People don't like that.
But they do. They do. It's the one thing this movie does where I'm like, oh, that's tasteful.
Yeah. No, they really treat the animals pretty well in this film. Okay. So, blind man is like gonna go feed Shadow, realizes he's not there, leaves the house, finds him somehow with his like spidey senses, and realizes he's dead. And then while he's out there, these characters break in to try and kidnap Phoenix.
Yeah.
So that kind of sets us on our, I'm like, okay, now we're doing the house thing, you know, where the characters are trying to kill them, but there's booby traps and all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's established that the daughter, if you will, and the blind man, you know, obviously it's not going to be a problem for them, because it's established that not only are we dealing with him, and if you've seen the prior movie, we know.
Well, she's like a junior Navy SEAL in training.
Exactly. And this is a plot thread that a lot of movies have been using lately. Like, I don't know if you remember the recent Halloween with Jamie Lee Curtis and Judy Greer, where Judy Greer, you know, she had this, you know, this agonizing childhood growing up as the daughter of a survivalist. There's been a bunch of movies like Hannah, a lot of films, in fact, about, you know, about parents, you know, imposing this sort of abusive slash resourceful sort of, you know, experience where, you know, your parent is more like a drill sergeant. T2.
Yeah, because Sarah Connor. Yeah, because they went through something traumatic, so they're going to make sure their kids are ready.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if it traumatizes the kids in the process.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't say that judgmentally. And by the way, again, who cares? It's a movie. But the movie establishes, like, okay, like, you know, for one thing, there's no suspense because I've seen the prior movie. And the movie is acting like we haven't seen the prior movie, which is interesting because it's really kind of a reset button. And the early scenes of the blind man, I mean, it's a very similar buildup. It's like, I don't know where my dog is, and I'm grumpy and mean to my daughter. And then and it's suddenly like, oh, there's people in the house. But once he has the opportunity to snap someone's neck or jab something into their artery, he's always up to the challenge. So again, like, yeah, it is suspenseful and it is very well done, but no surprises at all. If anything, it's okay. Like, that's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, the surprises are how she responds to everything.
And how the blind man dispatches the bad guys. There's one thing I've never seen before where he uses super glue to close all the orifice on the man's face. And then the bad guy's friend finds him and says, don't worry, bro. I got you, bro. A lot of broing in this movie. And he takes a screwdriver and shoves it in his cheek, creating, you know, a hole for him to breathe. And then he later takes like a knife and slices his mouth open. And I'm thinking like, okay, like, you're done, man. Like, tap out. You're good, bro. Go to the hospital. No, he's like, okay, man, we got to get the blind man. Let's go, man.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Because, I mean, I get it. You're tough. You have a hole in your cheek the size of a cigar. You had to slice your lips open. You're done, man. How much blood have you lost? Not to mention the shock.
Okay, but yeah. Now Phoenix is, she tries to escape, but they kind of like, you know, open the door to make her think she can get out. And then, you know, they don't let her, they trap her. But then the blind man comes to save the day and he's like, get in the box.
It's a very panic room. Yeah. So yeah. She goes and hides in this, basically a cage. That
in the
has
basement,
a, yeah, it has yeah. a, it has like this little, what do you call it? Like a little rafter, what would you say in the very top? These little slots.
Yeah.
So that there's air coming in. Otherwise,
yeah,
you
but
can't
she
get
can
into the
lock
box.
Herself in there.
Yeah.
So one of the guys, goes down there and he starts filling it up with water, which I thought, oh, wow, this is crazy. And then,
and by the way, now that we think about it, really not a plot point that makes any sense considering why they're there, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It
doesn't
make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
In hindsight, which
in
we'll
hindsight,
get to. Yeah.
You're right. It doesn't make any sense because he's trying to get her to come out, but like
he's going to drown her.
And then he's gonna electrocute her.
Yeah.
In the water. Like he takes
this guy has not read the memo. He's clearly like, oh, I'll just wing it, whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't sign up for this.
Exactly. So the blind man is, you know, goes down there and I don't know, explodes this guy.
That's one way to put it, yeah. So that's about as subtle as it comes across, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically causes his basement to explode,
yeah.
Which is how he dispatches the guy and he retrieves his daughter.
Yeah. All right, well, she gets taken by the bad guys because they beat up the blind man pretty bad and leave him. Oh, no, they stick the dog. Yeah, they have another dog, and they sick the dog on him.
It wouldn't be a Don't Breathe movie without a killer dog or two.
Exactly. And so this was funny because I thought he was going to kill this dog, and he has a gun pointed at the dog, so he kind of like barricades himself.
Yeah, using this bit of mesh.
He's yeah,
able to
yeah.
Hide from the dog. Yeah, and he has the gun pointed right at the dog and decides not to do it. Again, I like this guy. I'm not supposed to. I know, but I like the character. I do. He could have shot the dog dead.
That's
bang.
True.
He doesn't do it.
He could have. And I think this beginning part, I was like, wait, okay, so he's like a good quote quote-unquote good dad? I'm so confused.
He's an anti-hero. It's like a Western. There's the, you know, the bad guy swarming the house, and he's the, you know, he's the whatever, the tortured sheriff, or the outlaw turned, you know, legitimate man who has to defend himself and his family. I think there's some Western stuff going on in this.
Yeah. And then, but they tell her, like, while they're in the house, he's not your real dad.
Yeah.
You know, I'm your real dad. And the crazy part about this story is that, okay, so her parents, we find out her dad, like, blew up their house because there was a meth lab in it. And so she ends up as this little girl on the street. And the blind man finds her.
This is the flashback, the first thing we see in the movie. And it's a very striking shot. It's an overhead shot, aerial shot.
Well, it's like, how did he know it was a little girl? Like, how did he, like, take, how did this even happen?
Well, as I think we discussed in the prior episode, on the one hand, you would never ask these kind of questions that are so insensitive in real life. But because it's this movie and this character, we go, does he have sonar? Does he feel a trembling in the...
He's like... This is my long lost daughter. I'm going to go get her. It's so strange.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, he could have been stalking the house. I mean, and as we discussed, I don't think the movie establishes at all the geography of where the bad house is versus his house.
Well, maybe this meth house was in his neighborhood because she goes back to the house to, like, leave. Because he tells her your mom died in this fire. So she leaves stuff for her mom in this terrible house.
And it's another really bad plot twist where they end up finding her. It's established that they find the girl because they're, like, waiting for her in this old house. I mean, how many days are you sitting there waiting for this girl to show up and going?
Well, no, because the dad has been in prison this whole time.
Yeah.
And so he just got out. And then he goes to, like, see the house and just happens to be there on the day that
very
she's there.
Very convenient plotting.
Well, I think she goes there a lot. Because she, it looked like she'd left, like, quite a few things.
Yeah,
you know, and she's going because she obviously misses her mom, you know, and she's wondering what her parents were like, you know? Okay, so so he's stuck up in the attic and they light.
So you're the blind man.
Yeah, the blind man. And they Molotov cocktail his house. It's on fire. And so him. Did he save the dog?
Yeah,
he goes back and, like, saves the dog and, like, lets him out because he had kind of barricaded him up there in the attic. And the bad guys take Phoenix and they drive off. And so
the dog becomes a plot point because there is a member of this gang who clearly is not going to make it to, you know, to, like, the next day. He's constantly second guessing the main bad guy and he's going like, and I think the first indication is like, well, what about the dog, man? It's your dog. He's like,
oh yeah,
forget the dog.
He's like, the dog is dead, because he was like, you're gonna set the house on fire with your dog inside.
What about the dog, man?
And he's like, well, he's gone. Like, basically he's thinking the blind man killed
him. It's
like,
considering what these guys are doing, like, this guy can't even roll with these guys, considering. I mean, plus, like, this is the first thing he's objected to all night, the stuff that they've been doing.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's clearly not going to be, like,
the name of his character.
Make employee of the month. This guy, he's on his way out.
Yeah. All right. So the blind man is, like, trying to, nurse his wounds?
Yeah. He's doing he's full on Rambo. Doing the full-on Rambo, and he's made a new friend, this dog that was initially sent to kill
him. Well, he was kind of like, go home, like, what are you doing here? And the dog, I was like, oh, well, he just got a new dog. This dog is now loyal to him because he saved his life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The dog gets it.
Yeah. All right, so now we're at, like, another location, and this really is crazy because you don't think this movie works in two locations. But we can get to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first movie was one house, and this one, it's two places. So, whatever, the sequel will be three places. I mean, whatever, filmmakers.
Yeah, so this this guy, the kind of the head of this organ harvesting group, he tells Phoenix.
Raylan is the character's name.
Oh, Raylan, all right. He tells Phoenix, I'm your dad. I'm your real dad. And the way that he proves it is because they both have
a shock of white hair.
It's called a Malin streak, and it's supposedly hereditary. So I did look that up because I'm like, well, this is so strange. So she just has like this strip of like gray white hair and he has it too. And so that's his proof to her. And she's like, so I like who am I? And he's like, well, your name's Tara. You know, this is your birthday. No, you don't have any other brothers or sisters. You know, she's just asking basic questions. And, you know, do I look like my mom? And he's like, yes. Okay. So then he tells her like, yeah, the door's open. I mean, you don't have to stay with me, but kind of you can. And totally manipulating her. So she's going to go. She's like, oh, I'm out of here. And then there's like voice starts singing. Well, first it's like a wheelchair. It's like, and then this woman starts singing. And it's this song that Phoenix has had in her head her whole life. She's like, I think my mom sang this song to me. Now
it's for a movie that, yeah, it's a, I find the movie to be very predictable. I like this moment because you go, okay, because the character is introduced in darkness. We know it's a character in a wheelchair going, what is the deal? They really linger on the character in the darkness. You're going, is it someone who's deformed? Is it an old crone? Like, what are we about to see? So I like this moment a lot because like, there's a lot of possibilities here and I'm really not getting ahead of the movie in this case. So yeah, we do find out it is indeed her mother who has been wheelchair bound, and the turn of events happens very quickly. I would have liked a little more development, but
yeah, like it goes south pretty fast.
But, very, very fast.
But yeah. She's like, oh, you know, I'm your, yeah, they told you that I died, but I didn't. And
surprise,
I'm alive. And like hugs her. And what does she say? Oh, she starts coughing and she's like coughing up blood. And so Raylan, you know, whatever, wipes it away. And Phoenix is like, well, what's wrong with you? And they said, well, okay. So basically when their meth house exploded.
Apparently not very good at what they do.
Yeah. The mom's like all of that noxious gas, I guess, got into her lungs and it affected her heart. Which, how did it not affect him? Was he not home at the time? I don't know. But
he's out selling it,
I guess. So she's like, yeah, I'm terminal, you know, and I need a new heart. And I can only get one from a direct relative.
Tara, I'm dying. What? The smoke from the chemicals poisoned my blood and badly damaged my heart.
I don't think I have much time left.
Is there anything you can do? I heard you left flowers for me at our old house. Is that true? Weren't you wishing your mama was healthy and alive?
Yes.
I need a new heart, baby. But not just any heart. Doctor said it has to be a... it must be a compatible donor. Like a direct relative. You hold a gift that can save your mama's life. And baby, I need that gift.
So at this point, I'm like, oh my gosh. That's why they took Phoenix. They've only stolen her to kill her and take her heart and give it to this meth head. Wow.
It's great. I mean, it's so twisted and sick. It's very, it's like, I'm sure even Stephen King would have watched them and went, bravo, and started plotting. Fiona O'Shaughnessy plays the mother. I got to mention that. She played the mother in Gretel and Hansel, and this is a very different mother. This is not a sympathetic character. And I really like what she does here. It's a sick, twisted character, and she's playing it to the hilt, even though, again, the development here is, I mean, it's in fast forward. It's, everything's happening so quick. It's just a series of twists. The actors are just talking about what they're going to do. You know, just like, I would have liked a little bit more of the dynamic of the girl rediscovering her mother, you know, having, you know, a false sense of security about her father. But instead, it's like these, it's really just the plot. The plot device.
They know. She knows right away. Ooh, I'm in trouble.
And it doesn't make, you know, again, it doesn't make a lick of, I mean, it's enjoyable storytelling because you're learning the twists and whatnot, but it doesn't make a lick of sense. I mean, really, they should have just snatched the girl, chloroformed her, and put her on an operating table. This whole nonsense of like, what we're going to do is I'm going to tell her and she's totally going to be cool with it. She's going to be down and she's going to be like, Mom, I'll give you all my heart. And, you know, it's just going to be great.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
That they would tell her all this
no.
stuff.
No. Steal the kid, steal the heart. That's, yeah. Instead, like, there's all this talking. And, I mean, maybe they really are just such meth heads that they think this is a great plan. This is a very solid, well thought out plan. Because, I mean, what is the obvious thing? Like, you think maybe she's going to try to run away? Like, no, she's going to be so cool when she meets me and
she's
I'm going to take her heart.
She's going to, like, want to give me her heart. I mean, I'm her mom. That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's – so, I don't know. I mean, maybe if we look at it that way, like, these are crazy people, okay. But in terms of – I mean, there's so much planning in this movie.
Okay, no, but
– this isn't a good plan.
The crazier part, as if it couldn't get any crazier, is, like, two of his, I don't know, crony people –
there's, to the Raylan's,
yeah, Raylan's
bad guys.
Bad
yeah.
guys. They're sitting out there and they're like, man, I don't know if I feel good about this or whatever. And the guy's like, well, she's our cook. Like, if she dies, we don't have a business anymore. Like, what? You can't find someone else in the entire city of Detroit or surrounding city to teach them how to cook meth? Like you said, have you not seen Breaking Bad? I mean, there's a Jesse Pinkman out there just waiting for them.
I assume Breaking Bad exists in the Don't Breathe universe. Assume, like, I mean, anybody could learn how to make meth just by watching that show.
It's crazy. Yeah, they're like, she's the only way we're going to be able to keep this operation
running. I mean, don't these guys know about the dark web and they can get directions how to make meth? I mean, like, what? It's this girl in a wheelchair yeah. who's dying or nothing else.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, and cooking, that's a girl's job. I don't do that. I sell the meth. I'm not going to cook it.
Oh,
I'm not going to make it.
We got to get our new heart. Otherwise, we're out of a job, man.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, and again, I'm trying to go with this film. I am. I'm trying to really get the, because these characters are so scuzzy and evil, but their motivations don't add up at all. It doesn't make it a lick of sense. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Their operation doesn't make sense. The fact that they're in they live in an abandoned YMCA because there's a swimming pool.
Yeah,
I think.
I don't even know.
And look, I get it because the first movie establishes like there's these neighborhoods in Detroit that are completely empty and devoid. I mean, that's creepy. That's interesting, and I guess that's what they're going with here. But this is a big operation. Literally. I mean, they've got like hospital stuff all over this place, not to mention bodies.
Well, and how many people have they killed to try and get heart donors for her? And then what? They realize that it's not a match? Like, when do they realize it's not a match? It doesn't look like she has any scars on her chest. So clearly she has not been like operated on yet.
And this isn't even the most implausible thing about the movie. I mean, like we were discussing last night after we were watching it, like, I know the first one is basically Wait Until Dark with a dash of Home Alone and a dash of The People Under the Stairs, three movies I love. But despite that, I love the original film. I never questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things in the original movie.
As fantastical as it was.
That this character, the blind man, that he created. Presumably, despite the fact that he's blind, he creates this entire trap. He creates this whole basement world. He creates this hermetically sealed lifestyle that he's still able to have the combat skills he had when he had sight. I never questioned any of that because Fede Alvarez, the director, is brilliant because that movie is so tightly, beautifully constructed. It's simple. The things about it that are ambiguous, I think, are fine. This movie is spelling out a lot. There's a lot of over-explaining, and yet it it doesn't explain it enough. And you couldn't, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So,
and it gets worse, because how does the blind man re-enter the film? Well, he was stuck with the dog.
And he tells the dog, go home. And the dog stays with him. And then he's like, wait a minute. This dog can lead me to his home, which is probably where my daughter is.
And again, listeners, like, to be very clear about it, the film has not established geography. So we don't know if the evil YMCA turned meth lab is 5 minutes down the street or 5 hours away. We have no idea if this is like deep into Detroit or if this is like, you know, somewhere in Michigan. We have no idea. So what the movie does not show us but presumes is that the blind
man, a pretty short walk.
He's walking this dog, which is not a professional seeing eye dog, by the way, just down the street to where the bad guys are, and assuming that it's going to be the right place. As I was joking with you, like, what if the dog, like, goes into, like, the wrong neighborhood and, like, stops at, like, you know, a Kibbles and Bits factory?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't make sense. Just the fact that he said go home.
You sure this is where they are? You sure? Because I'm going to go on there. I'm going to kill everybody. You sure? You sure? You're okay. I'm going to go and kill everybody. She bit her butt 5 minutes later. There was no one in there. I got some biscuits. Like, what is that part of the movie like? I mean, like, people see, like, oh, that's so nice. That dog is leading that man. You know, I mean, it's just, it's so ridiculous. Well, it's so like the middle ridiculous. Of the night,
so.
Still, how long has this dog been a part of this gang? I mean, clearly this dog is very easy to break if the blind man is like, you're my puppy now. So would the dog even know? Would the dog really even know how to get back to the meth lab? Is it the smell of meth that's?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
He's like, just follow the meth smell.
The smell of all the cadavers. I don't know. It just, it's a lot, listeners. It's a lot to believe. I mean, you know, and I'm wondering too, because a lot of the film in the second act is taking place during two locations. The blind man is, you know, trying to get himself back up to snuff. And then we're constantly cutting to the scenes of the little girl discovering the horror of who her parents are and what they want with her. And I was really wondering, like, how are they going to connect these two worlds? How are they going to get the blind man back in here? And having it be that this dog just somehow takes him to the right place and like sneak. And I mean, it's a stealth operation, because it my favorite shot of in the whole movie, by the way, because it's very fun.
He doesn't go in the front door where everyone happens to be sitting. What, yeah. The dog takes him to like some side back door?
This is how it's going to go, Sparky. So the dog, I mean, it's my favorite shot in the movie. The dog just casually walks into the where the bad guys are and just casually goes over to its bowl and starts eating. It's really funny, because, you know, they're horrified, like, oh my god, the dog's here, how did the dog get here? And even they shoots the bowl.
He's like, I didn't train him how to find our house.
Yeah, so it's you know, but again, like, it's so crazy and plausible. I know it's not quite like the shark in Jaws the Revenge, which, you know, follows Sheriff Brody's wife to Jamaica. It's not that ridiculous, but it's up there. It is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so back to the crazy heart transplant situation. So this Raylan guy pays this surgeon to, I don't know, kill people and take their organs out? Maybe they are, like, selling organs on the black market. And then they just decided, like, hey, we can't get this meth addict on the heart transplant list, so we're going to need to get her one ourselves.
Are we to presume that this initially began with Mother, as she's identified in the credit, the character played by Fiona O'Shaughnessy? Mother is just saying, like, I really need you boys to get me a new heart. It's got to be presumably from family, but, you know, I'll take anything. So this is 8 years.
Well, okay.
So they're going out there. It's not working out. They're like, man, we got all these like baggies full of like bladders and hearts in the fridge. You know, maybe we should just sell these things. Is there a market for this? I know we're into the meth gang, but like, you know, maybe.
Okay, here's what I think happened, or what could have happened. So it's been 8 years, but we were talking, like, how long has she been sick? Like, how long has, you know, this is crazy.
This nonsense going on for 8 years.
8 years. Yeah. So I think maybe she did try to get on some transplant list, and she potentially had talked to some doctors and some surgeons, and they were just like, you're really not a good candidate, and you're going to have a donor who is like related to you, which is crazy because people get hearts from people that aren't related to them all the time. Another plot hole. I don't know why it has to be a direct relative. There's no way.
Logic and medical science. I think two things they didn't really look into when they wrote this film.
Yeah. I mean, I think for kidneys, they like, but again, it doesn't have to be a direct relative. It has to be somebody with the same blood type.
I mean, look, we get it. Like, just from like a story point of view, we get it. It's hideous. It's disgusting. They're disgusting. They're gross. Yeah. They live in a gross place. They're gross people. Their plot doesn't make, their plans don't make any sense, but whatever. You're gross. We get it. You're just, you're foul.
Okay. So maybe because the heart transplant list rejected her, they got into this world of organ harvesting. But it did say that Raylan had just gotten out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So these again, nitwits have been doing this
for like how long? These nitwits are doing it without him? I don't think so. They're not smart enough.
How's it going, sweeties? Have you guys found me a heart? Not yet. And the meth, we're doing better with the meth, but we're still like, looking for those hearts.
You gotta like step up production because like you're not making enough.
So like how many valves are supposed to be in the heart? Because like I think we found a heart, but it only has like two valves. Did you need three? And like
I think there's actually four.
And like, you know, I got a gerbil at home. He's got a heart. Like,
is that going to be too small?
Would that be sufficient? Could I do like two gerbil hearts for one heart if I like smash them together? And these guys are idiots. They're idiots. Okay, so and we're supposed to believe they've been doing this for 8 years in this YMCA. Do you think people knocked on the door? Can we go swimming? Sorry. You
know. Pool's being cleaned today. Yeah,
pool's being cleaned. Don't mind the smell of formaldehyde. Every day the
pool's being cleaned. Yeah. So, okay, but the surgeon guy, he says, because she wakes up, like they formaldehyde Phoenix, and then she's waking up and Raylan's like, why isn't she, you know, dead yet?
Formaldehyde. You mean they, it's not formaldehyde.
It's not formaldehyde?
What do you call it when you chloroform?
Oh, they chloroform. They chloroform. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, formaldehyde, she's in a jar. She's like, those alien embryos we saw at the freak show at the carnival.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. She's chloroform.
Okay, she's chloroform, yeah. But then she wakes up and Raylan's like, why isn't she dead? And he says, well, you know, I don't have like the type of refrigeration.
Yeah, the doctor's like, you know,
have to cut it out of her alive. And you're just like, wow, as if this plot couldn't get any grosser.
And a touch I really love is they cut to the mom and she's, you know, she's in the bed right next to her daughter and she's mouthing like, thank you.
Yeah.
Mommy loves you so much.
Yeah. She's like, your heart is going to be with me and it's going to live on in me forever.
Happy Mother's Day, sweetie.
Yeah. She's the creepiest.
Yeah. It's great. It's great. No, I mean, it's what the movie needs, honestly, because, I mean, this is all like Stephen Lang free parts of the movie. We need Stephen Lang. He, you know, he's everything for this film. The girl is doing great. Madeline Grace plays Phoenix. She's great. And again, the mother is great, but like the original had Jane Levy. You know, that whole thing of she's robbing the house in order to save her sister and herself. That was great. This movie doesn't have that because the little girl situation is constantly in flux. We're constantly wondering, you know, who really is her guardian? You know, it's the little girl is such a plot device that the film doesn't even give us enough time to really get to know her. Until the film is over, do we really understand really what her situation is, what her reality is? Otherwise, I mean, it's just one twist after another.
Yeah. And we're like, wow, she's going to have PTSD for the rest of her life.
Oh my. Well, I wonder if, like, is she going to become the blind man, basically? Is that what the sequel is going to be? But getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. Okay, so do they realize that he's there now?
They do, and it's a scene.
Oh no, because the guy, the blonde hair guy, goes down, and it's just like a one-on-one battle first.
Ah,
right.
Yeah,
and so he's got terrible hair, and you were like, "Does everyone in this movie have terrible hair?"
Terrible hair. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, look, I haven't been to Detroit in a while.
No, it's no offense to Detroit. It's just
I know Detroit's got some rough neighborhoods, but my God, I know they got barbers who can cut hair.
Okay, so Stephen Lang just kills this guy.
Yeah, deservedly so. Yeah. He's got a terrible haircut. He deserved to die.
He's an awful person. Yeah. Oh, because he was like, you killed my brother. And then Stephen Lang was like, well, you're dead now. So that guy's laying on the ground, mm-hmm. and Stephen Lang puts himself on the ground in this water.
Yeah, this scene is interesting because it's beautifully shot. It's visually striking. I haven't watched the trailer yet. For all I know, the whole trailer is around this scene. So what happens is, yeah, so
the gang, like Raylan sends all the guys
yeah,
down.
Yeah,
like, there.
Yeah, you all got to take this guy out because he's trouble. So the gang heads down and they find Stephen Lang as the blind man. He's lying down on the ground. He's surrounded by a water. It's almost like the room flooded, essentially. And there's a mm-hmm. lot of beautiful reflective surface. It's visually striking. The bad guys are ascending towards him. They think he's dead or passed out. And they send this ripple of water over to the blind man. And like Ariel, it like awakens him to life. And he jumps up, shoots them all, dead bang, right in the head.
Yeah, all of them except for one.
Yeah, except for, yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Of course, it's the one who has some moral issues. Yeah, he managed to shoot the one who actually has a moral compass.
But the guy was like, look, they're taking her somewhere else because, he had turned off the electricity. That's what happened. The blind man shut down the electricity, and so
you're my world now.
Yeah, so that the surgery couldn't go.
Right,
like there was anyways.
Because the surgeon's like, oh, well, you know,
I can't do this without any power.
I don't know how to use a knife. I'm more of a chainsaw kind of guy.
Well, so the guy was like, you need to go get her. He's like, I don't agree with what's happening. They're leaving right now. You need to like. Go rescue this girl. And so he lets that guy live, which it's not like he's a good guy, but whatever.
Good guy. I like the blind man.
No, I mean the gang guy.
Oh, the gang guy. The movie's trying to establish that he's, yeah. But maybe a more interesting thing to talk about is that it's established that this particular gang, they're all former servicemen. They're all military.
Oh, yes,
they're all former military. So I think the movie is, in its unspoken way, trying to comment how basically they're all basically like the blind man because the blind man is also a former Navy SEAL, top of the top. And these guys, maybe not on that level, but they're all, you know, former.
I think they were all Army Rangers because when Hernandez ran into them on her fateful night, she was wearing her patch or whatever. Sorry, no disrespect to our servicemen and women, but I don't know what any of them mean. So they were kind of like,
and it is just a movie,
but
by
they
the
were
way.
Acknowledging yeah. like, oh, you served. Yeah. Oh yeah. We served too. So,
and they kill her moments later in a vicious, disgusting way. But yeah, exactly. I think the movie's trying to establish that, you know, these are all former soldiers who have served their country and, you know, somewhere along the way, they've completely lost their souls. They're mm-hmm. now, you know, the opposite of who they used to be. And the blind man, in a sense, is trying to get that back in a way. I think the movie is really trying to give him some kind of, I mean, I think there is an arc for this character where he's longing for redemption, whereas the other characters are just like, no, it's cool.
No, we're just
snatching hearts and selling meth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible. Oh my god!
Matching T-shirts,
snatching hearts
and selling meth.
That's a great.
Happy
slogan.
Valentine's Day.
Great slogan for these losers. Okay, so the surgeon and Raylan and the mom and Phoenix are all trying to, I guess, go to like a third location where there's electricity so they can finish up this ridiculous.
Right.
I mean. They think they're going to do surgery on this woman, give her a new heart, and she's not going to have like a massive infection and die. It doesn't make sense. So he ends up killing. So the blind man gets up to where they are, shoots the surgeon. He's a goner. And then Phoenix and the mom are like handcuffed to each other so that she can't get away. And so Raylan and the blind man get into a big fight. And what does he say to Raylan? He like puts his thumbs on his eyes.
You're my world now. And he plucks
He's like, you're going to see what I see.
Pops his peepers. It's a lot like the...
pops his peepers.
That's what he does. It's like the scene in Blade Runner where Rucker Hauer does that to his inventor, his creator. And it's a graphic, disgusting moment where the juice just spurts out. It's gross and awful. But in that case, the dude dies. In this case, it just subdues him for a moment.
Yeah. And doesn't he shoot the mom before that, though? I think he shoots the mom before that. Like, she gets shot.
Yeah. Although it feels like the character lingers a little long because there's this business of her falling. The wheelchair goes over the edge into the empty pool and the daughter's trying to escape.
Yeah. And they both fall in, but she's... And then...
Phoenix, an arm gets chopped off. Yeah,
Phoenix chops off the arm. It's like, oh my gosh, this is so gross.
Just like you, mommy, it's stealing organs. Like my little daughter.
I know. So she... She escapes. The mom is dead at the bottom of the pool.
Yeah.
Raylan's blind and supposedly dead. And the blind man is laying there and he tells Phoenix, like, don't come near me. You know, and then this is his speech you hated.
The scene, if any speech should have been cut from this movie, it's this. It's just laying it on a little thick. You know, it's like, we know, man. We've seen the prior movie. We've seen this movie. You don't need to see all this stuff. It's like, I've killed a lot of people. I'm a rapist. I'm a bad, bad, bad man. And I'm going, no, Stephen Lang. Like, the character is again, shrouded in mystery. Like, you did not need to say any of this stuff. You've clearly, even though this is a world that's so scuzzy and gross, you clearly redeemed yourself. You came and you used using an unofficial non-seeing eye blind dog. You managed to get to this place and kill everybody. You've saved the girl. You don't need to apologize for anything.
Well, he thinks he does. But then, Raylan, like, comes out of... So Raylan's blind, by the way. Comes up behind the blind man and like, stabs him.
He's only been blind for, like, a few minutes, but he's able to sneak up behind the blind man.
Yeah.
And perfectly stab him right in the exact place that you know, discombobulates him and causes him to bleed out.
But then Phoenix stabs him, the dad. Her dad, her real dad.
Yeah.
And then pushes, and he ends up like going into the pool and dying next to his terrible wife.
It's literally very tidy and neat that the two villains are dead together at the bottom of this empty pool. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then Phoenix is holding the blind man's head, and what does he say? Like, I just wanted to be saved or something. I just wanted to save you. I don't know, but she says, like, you saved me, and then he dies in her arms. No,
you saved me.
Oh, yeah, you saved me.
You saved me. Not that dog that helped me walk 16 miles in darkness. No, you saved me.
Yeah, but, I mean, all right. And so she just, like, has to walk away from all this catastrophe. I mean, her last scene, she ends up at that home for kids, you know, that shelter.
Yeah.
Which she wanted to be at even before all this happened.
It feels like a reshoot because she walks away from the former YMCA turned meth house, and it's this very elaborate crane shot of the camera looking down at her. It's very reminiscent of the opening scene where she's not like crawling on the ground. She's walking away from this life. And it feels like that's where the movie probably ended. And I'm sure they had a test. I suspect they had a test screening. And they said, we can't end it that way. We got to give it a little happier after all this. So, yeah, you do have her going to this...
The shelter,
which I guess is a happy ending. Is there
any room for one more? You know, and they're like, yeah. Okay, great. So she's going to live there with these kids, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then we see what... The blind man.
And it's like, this comes like halfway through the end credits, right? So it's like one of those Marvel surprise endings, even though you know something's coming up, where the dog, the amazing dog, reappears, goes to the blind man, licks his fingers, and I guess his fingers like twitch, I guess.
Well, we don't know.
At that point, I honestly had checked out so completely on this movie.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not happy about this film at all, especially with the wrap-up scenes. I think there's a lot of good stuff here that maybe if the film had been longer or smarter, a little more well-developed.
It needed to be smarter. Like, there's too many plot holes and that are illogical and don't make sense. But my theory is that the blind man is actually Kevin McAllister from Home Alone. So... Kevin McAllister gets his start with, you know, hurting bad guys as a kid and sets up booby traps in his house. Then he decides to enlist in the military, and he goes off and he does become a Navy SEAL. And he sees the fog of war, and he is a trained combat machine. He comes back blind, PTSD, and then he becomes a blind man. And that's so his story continues with Don't Breathe, the first movie.
I think what would have made a lot of sense for me is if it's established that this man, it's established that before we meet him in the first film, we learn that he has he's lost so much, and he has kidnapped a woman, kept her in the basement. I think what would have made so much of what he does so much more plausible is if we learn that being blind is an act, and that when people are around, got to put in the contact lenses and do the thing. So I think that would have made a lot more sense if it was established he's not really blind. He's just faking it. That's how he can kill anybody who screws with him. Because otherwise, I mean, what are we talking about here? I mean, this guy makes Rambo look so unmotivated. I mean, this guy is amazing.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to do this stuff, but people keep breaking into his house. They keep messing with him. You know, He's not like going out and trying to do these things. Now, he did kidnap that girl. When I say he's not going out, like, it's only people that come into the house or onto his porch that he does bad things to. And then when they kidnap his daughter. So
like Jehovah's Witnesses and like the Census Bureau, when they go to, I mean.
Do you don't want to be one of those people?
Yeah, you just don't want to go to
No, you could end up in his basement in a box. Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
Yeah. Let's see. The film, the guy who directed this film, it's not Fede Alvarez who did the original, and I'm a big fan of Fede Alvarez. It's Rodo Sayugis, who is a Uruguayan filmmaker. He co-wrote the original, as well as Fede Alvarez's remake of Evil Dead, which I love. And so this was his directorial debut. And, you know, it's the problem is not with the way the film looks. It's not a problem with the way it was made. It's very well made. This is clearly a very good filmmaker.
It's the screenplay.
It's the script. The script is bad. Yeah. And it falls apart. And it has, like, a lot of, like, really wild ideas in it. Some really great, sinister, creepy ideas. But it not only does it feel rushed, it feels so contrived. It never... I never believed in this movie. And again, like, I know the original is very far-fetched, but I always believed in it. And this one, I never believed in it. I've always felt like I'm either the script would be too little or too much. It's too much when they're over-explaining everything. Yeah. There's not a lot of plot twists in this movie that you just see it happen. It basically, everybody is talking the plot to death. And it's a shame. Because the original was such a sleeper and such a wonderful film. And it was one of these rare things where it was a word of mouth hit. It was in theaters for a long time. And it made so much more than anybody thought it would. And it was critically acclaimed. And horror fans are like, this is something really new and wonderful and different. And this is just a sequel for me.
Hmm. Okay, so how many stars did you give it?
Two.
Two stars. And how would you change the ending?
How would I change the ending? There's so much about the third act I would change. Is there anything in particular you would do?
I don't know. I just feel like they needed to change the motivation of these meth heads because it just doesn't make any sense that they need this one woman to cook for them. I mean, geez, talk about the patriarchy right here, even in like the meth world. She has to do it. She's the only one. Mm. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's a lot of things wrong about that.
It's so sexist.
It's sexist. They're stealing organs.
Yeah.
They're dealing meth. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how it would have changed the script, honestly, but yeah.
The blind man's getting up there, so I feel like if there's a sequel, it has to take place in an old folks home. And I think what would have to happen, is that I think the people, you know, like let's call it like Shady Meadows. I think the people that work there, they're like, you know, that dude has a safe in his room. There's like a lot of money in there. Well, I think we should like wait till he's like downstairs, like, you know, on, you know, having like, you know, like during
his nightcap.
No. It would be like during a tango night.
Oh.
During, you know, because, you know, the old folks, they love the tango night. So when they're doing when he's doing tango night, we go up there and we take that money.
The old people or the nurses?
The nurses.
Okay.
And they go up there. That makes more sense. What they realize is they don't realize that the old man has his daughter living with him.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah.
Where is she?
Well, she escaped from
How is she living with him?
You're asking for logic in a Don't Breathe sequel? Well, what happened was she burned down the shelter where she was before. She killed all of them because she's basically him, right? So now she's living with him. And yeah, so it becomes, so she's like.
She's crazy?
Yeah, she's crazy like her father. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Because he doesn't need a dog anymore. He's got a daughter.
No, I think we should keep the dog.
Well, I think the dog is going to stay no matter what. I mean, you've seen what this dog will do for the blind man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like a super creepy idea.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think you need to follow through in the opening scene because on the one hand, he's teaching her survival skills, but the dude is Ted Bundy.
No, it's true.
He's terrible. So yes, it's great that he's teaching her these skills to help her keep alive, but he's a psychopath. He's a killer. He's awful. He's Hannibal Lecter. So if he's going to have a parental relationship with this little girl, it's poisoned, and she's poisoned by it. So I would want that. I would want to keep, because I really like the father-daughter dynamic. I think it's fascinating. That was one of my favorite things about one of the only Kevin Costner movies I'd ever watch again. That's not The Bodyguard, and that's Mr. Brooks. Do you remember that one?
No.
Mr. Brooks, he's a serial killer, but he's a respectable businessman. And he has a young daughter played by Danielle Panabaker. And the subplot there is that her professor has vanished and she wasn't doing well in the class. So Kevin Costner's character, who's a serial killer, he's wondering, is his daughter like me? Like, did she kill the professor? And it's great. Like, it's the movie asks this really uncomfortable question. Is being a psychopathic killer something that's hereditary? It's a really weird question. And the movie explores it really well. And it's a really good movie. And Costner is not playing his good old aw shucks. So I like that idea. I'm not saying I think this
Yeah, but they're not related. So is this like a nature versus nurture thing?
Yeah, she's becoming him because she grew up with him. And because every day she's dealing with this nonsense, she's in his world. She even is able to deal with the bad guys in the first and in the second act of the film by turning off the light. So I feel like she is an extension of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I don't care if it's hereditary or not. I mean, she's, you know.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right. Did you hear that? Don't Breathe 3.
That's my pitch for it. And when she first reveals herself to be living with the blind man, what we find out, she's gouged her eyes out. She's blind like
oh,
he is.
Oh, man.
So she's got like little droplets of blood
sick.
Coming down.
Okay.
You're not my daddy. Oh, you're going to pay. Daddy's so proud of you.
She knows that he's not her real dad.
Well, I think they've reestablished the parental bond. I think they go back to it. They need each other. They miss each other.
Okay.
One happy family.
So creepy.
It's turkey time. I got the baster.
Oh my god. Gross. Yeah, that was one thing you said. This
oh
movie.
Man, serious lack of a turkey baster. Like, just show it to us in one scene. Come on, man. You know we're waiting for that.
So gross. All right.
I was.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, that is, I think that's enough of talking about Don't Breathe 2.
Yeah, I'm glad we saw it because we loved the first one and there was anticipation. We even spoke about it on the prior pod. We were excited about the fact that they were doing a sequel. But
yeah
it's maybe worth seeing once and never again,
yeah.
I don't think.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everybody and we'll talk to you next time.
Good night, everyone.